This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Charlie Hayden is among the most important bass players in jazz history. He turns 65 next Tuesday and will celebrate with 2 weeks of duet performances at the Blue Note in New York. We're going to listen back to highlights of several interviews Hayden recorded on Fresh Air. First, let's hear something from his latest CD, Nocturne, featuring Cuban-born pianist Gonzalo Rubalcaba. Charlie Hayden from his latest CD, Nocturne. Hayden helped change the shape of jazz in the late 50s and early 60s as a member of the original Ornette Coleman Quartet. In 1969, he launched his own group, the Liberation Music Orchestra, whose music was inspired by democracy movements around the world. In 1986, he founded his group Quartet West, whose sound evokes film noir, detective novels, and Los Angeles of the 40s and 50s, and pays tribute to jazz singers of the 40s and 50s. Hayden grew up in a family of singers that performed on their own country music radio show. We'll talk about that a little later. First, let's hear Hayden with the Ornette Coleman Quartet, playing Lonely Woman, recorded in 1959. The Ornette Coleman Quartet featuring Charlie Hayden on bass. In 1985, Hayden told me about his first encounter with Coleman.
I was 19 years old, and we played all day long. And he had a room full of music strewn all over the floor, the walls, the ceiling. He was constantly writing music, and he told me before we started to play, he said, "Charlie, I've written these pieces now, and here's the chord changes. Now, these are the chord changes that I heard inside myself when I was writing the melody, but these are just a guide for you. I want you to be inspired from them and create your own chord structure from the inspiration or from the feeling of what I've written. And that way, constantly, a new chord structure will be evolving. And we will be constantly modulating, and we'll be listening to each other, and we will make some exciting music." And that's exactly what happened.
Were you surprised at how controversial the music was when you started playing it? You know, a lot of people couldn't handle it at all, musicians, listeners.
I was very involved in learning about the playing. We were all involved because it was a brand new language. We didn't even think of it as being a brand new language. We only thought of it as we're hearing something and we got to play it. And we were constantly learning about what it was we were doing. Things were being born every day out of what we were doing. And there was a lot of controversy around us. When we opened up at the Five Spot in New York, fights used to break out right in the club. People would be putting us down. People would be praising us. The club was packed every night with everybody from different parts of the art world, painters, famous writers, filmmakers, dancers, musicians. I would look out, and standing at the bar would be Paul Chambers, Percy Heath, Charlie Mingus, and they would be looking dead in my eye, you know, and saying, okay, what are you going to do? And I would be playing and have my eyes closed, and one night I opened my eyes and there was Leonard Bernstein with his ear glued to the front of my instrument. And I looked over to Arnett and said, what is this? He says, I'll tell you later. And then we were invited to Leonard Bernstein's table. He invited us to the Philharmonic rehearsals, and he couldn't believe that I was self-taught, and he wanted to try and get me to study music. And he was very helpful in me getting a Guggenheim Fellowship 10 years later in composition. But it was like that every night. It was very exciting. The violence wasn't exciting. I mean, one guy set somebody's car on fire one night, I remember. Somebody came back in the kitchen. We were standing talking with Ornette, and I won't say who it was, and hit Ornette in the face, you know. I mean, it was really a very strong excitation time. New things were happening, not only in music, but in people's minds every night from that music, you know. And people were always asking me why I was the only white musician, and I never thought about that until people asked me about it, you know. But that's the way life is. That's the way human beings are.
Charlie Hayden recorded in 1985. We talked more about Ornette Coleman in our 1996 interview. Now, when you were young, in your early 20s, I guess, you started playing with Ornette Coleman's group. When you first met Ornette Coleman, which was before he was known to anyone, what was he doing that coincided with what you wanted to do?
I'd been going to a lot of jam sessions and playing in L.A. with a lot of different people, and sometimes I would hear... I mean, I love playing on chord changes. That's the reason that I love this music, and I love improvising on beautiful changes that inspire you. But sometimes I wanted to stay on a certain part of the song and keep playing, and sometimes I wanted to play on the inspiration of a piece rather than on the chord structure. But, I mean, I couldn't put it into words back then, but whenever I tried to do what I was hearing, people would get upset. And when I heard Ornette play, that's what he was doing. I mean, that's the way he played all the time.
How do you think your playing was permanently changed by playing with Ornette Coleman?
Well, it wasn't changed. It was really deeply affected. I mean, it was a way that I learned about listening to the musicians that you were playing with at the moment you're playing with them. It's so important to listen to everyone. And that's the way it was really affected by playing with Ornette. Plus the fact that I developed this really strong desire, you know, to play with my whole life on the line, to be willing to give my life for every note I play, that every note is really, really important. Each note for people to hear, you know. The reason that we're playing this music is to bring more people to this art form so that they can see that it's a beautiful art form and it can touch their life in a really great way and enhance their life, and that there's an alternative, you know. This music is an alternative for people to know about and to experience. So I think that's why we were all playing. That's why I play now, is to bring people near this art form.
Charlie Hayden recorded in 1996. We'll hear more from Hayden after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bass player and composer Charlie Hayden is celebrating his 65th birthday on Tuesday. We're listening back to his Fresh Air interviews and his music. Before we get back to our 1996 interview, let's listen to Hayden's composition, Here's Looking at You, recorded with his group Quartet West in 1995.
Thank you.
that you're the most melodic bass player that I can think of.
And, oh, thanks.
Yeah, especially when you're improvising. There's a sense of melodic sweep to the lines that you play. I think a lot of bass players just think more harmonically, and they think about rhythm, but not so much about melody.
Well, I was brought up with melodies all my life from the time I was, well, even before I was two, when I started singing on my parents' show, radio show every day. My mom told me once, she said, you know, when I used to rock you to sleep, I used to hum all these songs. She knew all these great folk songs like Barbara Allen and Mansion on the Hill and Silver Threads Among the Gold and Wildwood Flower. And she used to hum all these songs while she was rocking me to sleep when I was a baby. And, you know, one of my brothers and sisters would be walking through the living room and she, while she would be humming in the rocking chair, and they would start humming the harmony with her because everybody sang all the harmony parts on our show. They all knew how to do that by ear. And then my mom would sometimes switch to the harmony and they would switch to the melody, and I was hearing all this stuff. And she said one day she was humming to me and I started humming the harmony with her, you know, and before she said, well, I guess that's a signal for you to go on the show, you know. So I started on the radio show when I was 22 months old. It's real important, melodies and harmonies. You know, I tell my students at CalArts that they should be able to harmonize every melody that they know by ear, every harmony part. And it's so important. I was really lucky to be brought up around melodies of the Carter family and the Delmore brothers and Hank Williams and all those people that my parents knew. And I guess that was my, it was a very strong musical training in my young life. I acquired a melodic sense very early on. I'm very, very fortunate that I was raised around that great music.
Charlie, how do you see the role of the bass in a band? You know, I think a lot of people think that since the bass isn't usually the lead instrument, that it's kind of in the background someplace. As the leader of a group who's a bass player and composer, how do you see your bass fitting in?
I think the role of a bass player, as far as in the rhythm section, is to really lift everything up and make it deeper and make it more full sounding. You know, when I was a kid listening to classical music on the radio or whatever, I was even in country music, when the bass player stopped playing, it's kind of like the depths kind of left the music for me. That's why I always wanted to play bass, and it's really important if bass players enhance everything behind the solo so that you can inspire the other musicians to play better than they've ever played before. That's what I always try to do.
What part did you sing with your family when you were a boy? And your family had a country music radio show and performed country music all around.
I sang all the harmony parts. You know, I couldn't wait to get to the studio every day. I loved it. Every day, my parents would choose the songs that we were going to play out of their vast library of songs from the Carter family and the Delmore brothers and all the hymns that we had. And we would go over them and then we would go on the air. Sometimes we had radio studios in our homes wherever we were living. We moved around a lot, but mostly we would go to the studio at the radio station and do our show every day. I loved going to the studio and I liked the air conditioning and the acoustical tile, you know, the acoustical tile and the big windows, you know, that had triple, quadruple glass. And this was back in 1945, 46, 47, 48, 49. It was a great experience.
I can't believe you had radio studios in your home. Would you do remotes from your own home?
Yeah. You know, where I was born in Shenandoah, Iowa, we were on a radio station there called KMA. It's still there. And my dad moved our family to Springfield, Missouri, in the Ozark Mountains. And my grandparents, my father's mother and father, had a farm outside Springfield, and my dad always wanted to do farming. So he got this farm down the road, you know, gravel road. I went to a one-room schoolhouse there, Bellevue School, and in our farmhouse, my dad had the radio station come out and hook up a remote thing where, you know, those the things that you ring where you turn the crank?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, he used to turn this crank, and when the ring would go into the studio in Springfield, and that was a signal for us to go on the air, and we'd start the theme song. And we did it from our, we did our show from the radio, from our home, from our farmhouse for several years before we moved into the city. And went over to the station every day.
So did you play in churches and at revival meetings and stuff in addition to singing on the radio?
We played in churches. We played personal appearances all over. My parents were on the Grand Ole Opry quite a few times.
You know what I'm wondering? If singing at churches and other, you know, other like religious events, revivals, whatever, if that gave you a sense that music had this spiritual potential in it?
Well, the hymns especially that we sing, you know, and then my mom used to take me when I don't know why she chose me to take, but I was one of the, I was the one child. She had six kids, you know, I had three brothers and two sisters. And several Sunday mornings, quite a few Sunday mornings actually, when I was around 9 years old, she would take me to the African American church in Springfield. There was just one of them, and we would go in after everyone was there. We would kind of like quietly go in the entrance, and we would sit in the back row, and we would just listen to the choir. It was like one of the most beautiful things that I've ever experienced in my life, to hear that music, the spirituals and the gospel music, and I'll never forget that. Yes, I had a really early contact with spirituals and hymns, and I had a feeling right away that there was a spirituality in music. I mean, you know, when you talk about jazz, I believe 85-90% of improvisation in jazz is spiritual. You know, it's a spirituality that's you can go to school and learn the academics of music and the fundamentals and scales and chords and composition and all that. But when you start to play and you tell a story to people and you take people on a journey that you want to take them on, it's all about spirituality.
Charlie, a recent album of yours is an album of spirituals, hymns, and folk songs, and it features you with the pianist Hank Jones. It's an album of duets. Are any of these songs that you used to do as a child?
Yeah, we used to do Abide With Me and some of the other hymns that we do, Amazing Grace, on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, every hymn that's on Steal Away, we used to sing, and Hank and I chose which hymns and which spirituals. He had a lot of spirituals. Hank was from the spiritual part of it, and he knew all these great songs. You know, my favorite one that I've ever heard him play was "It's Me, O Lord, Standing in the Need of Prayer," and that's the one that I heard on the Smithsonian Collection of Jazz Piano. That inspired me to do the record with him, and I called him as soon as I heard it, and I said, "Man, that's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. Could we play spirituals together sometime?" And he said, "Charlie, I'd really love to do it. Let's do it."
Charlie Hayden recorded in 1996. We'll hear more of his interviews and music in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Charlie Hayden, one of the most important bass players in jazz history, turned 65 on Tuesday. He's celebrating with a series of duet performances at the Blue Note in New York. We're celebrating by listening back to highlights of his Fresh Air interviews. When we left off, we were talking about his childhood when he sang with his family on their country music radio show.
You stopped singing as a child for a while because, I guess you stopped singing altogether because of polio?
Yeah, I had bulbar polio, which there was an epidemic going on in 52. And we were in Omaha, Nebraska. We had a television show there. This was right before my dad retired from music. And And I got this virus, and it paralyzed. I was really lucky, actually, because most of the hospitals were filled with polio patients, and it was all paralyzed lung, function and legs, and mine hit my vocal cords for some reason, the left side of my throat and my face, I eventually, the doctor said I was a very lucky guy, and I eventually got over it, but the thing that I couldn't do anymore, the range in my voice kind of left me. I couldn't sing. I loved singing, but I wasn't able to sing anymore.
So what's the connection between the polio and not being able to sing and learning to play bass?
Well, I really don't know if there's a connection. I was playing bass before I had polio. I was playing my brother's bass. He wouldn't let me play his bass, but every time I could sneak into where he kept the bass, I would go in and play it, And I love playing the bass with records that we had, and then when I was 14 in Omaha, I was in the ninth grade. They had an orchestra at school at North High, and the orchestra director wanted me to play bass. When he found out I play bass, he said, "We need another bass in the bass section of the orchestra." And I said, "I can't read music." And he said, "Well, I can teach you." So he took me down to the band room. His name was Sam Thomas. I'll never forget it, man. And he showed me the first page of the Simandl book, the bass method book, and all the open strings were there. And he said, "Now I want you to practice playing these with a bow. This is a G, this is a D, this is an A and an E, and practice this while I'm gone, and then we'll start on the half position, and we'll go to the first position to where you press down the strings, he said, "You're playing this anyway by ear, with the little band you have here at school, but now you're going to know how to read it." And I said, "Great." So he left the room, and I started getting real nervous, I mean, I got this anxiety attack. I said, "Oh, my," I looked at these notes, and I was bowing, and all of a sudden I thought I was having a heart attack. And, I was, can you imagine having a heart attack at 14? And so, man, I grabbed my chest, I put the bass down, I went out and ran out in the hall to the water fountain and started drinking all this water, and a couple of students came up to me, my friends, and said, "What in the world's wrong?" I said, "I think I'm having a heart attack." I said, "Charlie, you're out of your mind. You're not having a heart attack." I said, "I think I am." And Sam Thomas came back, and he was cracking up, man. He said, "You're not having a heart attack, Charlie. You're just, learning how to read music."
So did you finally overcome your fear
Oh, yeah. No, I played with the school orchestra. It was really great, and
that probably opened up a whole new world of music, too. Yeah. Music you'd only have access to if you could read.
That's right.
I want to ask you about something that I figure must be affecting your music in some way. I think you have a ringing in your ears problem, which I know a lot of musicians get from being either too close to loud amplifiers, to loud speakers, or too close to drums. How bad is the problem? Does it drown out the music? Does it affect what you hear?
Well, it's to a point where while I'm here talking to you, I've got the volume on these headphones almost off. I have also a condition called hyperacusis, which is extreme sensitivity to loud sound. In other words, if someone was to drop a fork on the floor or a plate or there's any kind of sudden sound, loud sound, it's like hitting me in the head. It really hurts me. And the doctors tell me that there's a membrane in the inner or middle ear that protects the ear from loud sound, and it's not working in my case. And so it's like the volume is turned up in my head. I hear stuff triple louder than most people do. Whenever I take a hearing test, I go over the limit on the hearing test. I hear so well. And a lot of people with this other condition I have called tinnitus, most people that have tinnitus, they lose their hearing. But in my case, my hearing's just becoming more and more acute, and I hear this ringing in my head that is so loud that if most people heard what I hear, they would run down the street screaming. But I've adjusted to it over the years, and I just made it a part of my my life, you know, and I kind of put up with it. But it's, if I stop and think about it, I get real depressed. So let's change this. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, does it drown out the music that you play?
Oh, no. No, it doesn't. I wear earplugs when I play.
So that the other musician sounds aren't too severe for you?
Yeah, so it'll soften the decibels. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Charlie, I'd like to go out with something from your new Quartet West album. And you end the album with something called Now is the Hour. It's the title track of the record. And you say it's a Maori farewell song. How did you learn this song, and tell us something about it?
I used to listen to this song on the radio during World War II. Bing Crosby recorded it, and it sold millions of records. And Vera Lynn, I believe, in England recorded it. It was a very well-known song during World War II because it depicted, you know, the guy going off to war and his wife saying, you know, when you come back, I'll be waiting for you, but we must say goodbye now. And I just love this song. And, you know, I have a lot of songs that I have from my childhood that I'm saving up to do with whatever band that I hear it with, and this was one of them. And then I was speaking to Alan Broadbent, who's from New Zealand, about the song, and he said, you know, that's a Maori folk farewell song. And I said, well, I guess that's where it came from, you know. So I knew then what we had to do it, because Alan also was close to the song, and so we did.
Would you sing the song as you remember it?
Well, I'll try. Now is the hour when we must say goodbye. Soon you'll be sailing far across the sea. While you're away, oh, then remember me. When you return, you'll find me waiting here.
That's a really lovely song.
Yeah.
Charlie Hayden recorded in 1996. Let's hear his version of the Maori love song as recorded on his 1996 CD, Now is the Hour. Hear an excerpt of our 1999 interview with Charlie Hayden after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're celebrating the 65th birthday of jazz bass player and composer Charlie Hayden by listening back to his Fresh Air interviews. When we left off with our 1996 interview, it ended with me coaxing him to sing. I was surprised and delighted 3 years later to find that he sang on the final track of his CD, The Art of the Song. You, as a rule, don't sing on your CDs. I think this is your first recorded performance outside of the years when you sang with your family. When you were a child, your family had a country group and used to sing on the radio. So tell us the story about how you decided to sing on your own CD.
I stopped singing on our show when I was 15. I developed bulbar polio, and it paralyzed my vocal cords. And eventually, you know, I got my vocal cords back, but I lost the range in my voice, and
And I used to sing every day on our radio show from the time I was 2 until I was 15. And after that occurrence, I kind of focused all my musical melody energy into my playing. I just started playing the bass and playing along with records around where we were living in Springfield, Missouri. And then when I moved to L.A., playing, you know, seeking out the great musicians. And I never really thought about singing again after that. And I didn't even sing in the shower. You know, it wasn't that I was afraid to. It was just like it was over, you know, for me. And so recently some people have been talking about, you know, you used to sing, how come you don't sing anymore, or sing, you know, Ruth, my wife, who's a singer, has said, you know, why don't you sing? And then actually one day I was on your show a while ago, and we were talking about Now Is the Hour, and you asked me to sing it, and I was very reluctant, and I couldn't believe that you asked me, and I finally gave in and sang, and you called back later and said that you thought it was great and that I should sing sometime on one of my records. And I said, well, thanks for the compliment, Terry. And, you know, I just kind of, it was kind of humorous to me, and I never really took it seriously until we started planning this record. And I was going through music, and I ran across some of our music from our radio show with my family back in the 40s, and I saw this song called The Wayfaring Stranger that my mom used to sing and on our show, and I remembered how beautiful it was. And then I was going through some LPs and CDs, and I found this recording of Joe Stafford singing folk music, and one of the songs on the album was The Wayfaring Stranger, and I listened to it, and it reminded me of how beautiful the song was. And so I thought about doing it on the record instrumentally, and then I thought, you know, this isn't a song for Shirley or Bill to sing, but it should really be sung because the words are so beautiful, because I remembered when my mom sang it. And so I said, well, the only way it could be sung is if I sing it. And I thought, you know, oh my goodness, that's not going to work. And Alan was over, and I played it for him. I said, what do you think of this? And he said, wow, that is really beautiful. I said, what would you think if I tried to sing it? And he said, wow. He said, that'd be different. And I said, so.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I said, well, you know, and I even, I called Jean-Philippe Allard, our executive producer in Paris, and I said, you know, I might sing on this record. And there was a big silence. And he said, pardon? I said, I might sing. And another long silence. Pardon? I said, anyway, I told Alan, I said, write the arrangement as if somebody's going to sing it. And if I don't make it, I'll play it on the bass, you know. And so he wrote the arrangement. I didn't practice the song, you know, a couple of times. You know, I was a little nervous. Around the house, I kind of sang the melody at home just to go through it, just to make sure that I could actually sing, you know. And I didn't want to do it too much because, you know, I didn't want to get my mindset in like, oh, I'm a singer and I've got to sing this like a singer and it's got to be perfect. Because I really believe singers, and that's why I love Shirley Horn and Bill Henderson so much, is that they sing the way they speak. I mean, when they stop speaking and start to sing, they don't change their voice the way they say their words or anything about what they're doing in any way. They just, it's just natural and honest, and that's why they're such great singers. And, you know, a lot of singers now, and even in the past, as soon as they began to sing, they everything changes, it's all of a sudden somebody else, you know. And so I didn't want to make myself nervous, so we got into the studio, and I just got up to the microphone, and they started to play it, and I sang. And Shirley Horn came in to me, and she said, you got to put this on the record. And I said, are you really serious? She said, yes.
And she said, some of those string players out there are in tears. I said, well, that's probably because it's so bad, you know. She said. So I put it on the record, and I hope people like it. It's not doing it as a singer. It's doing it to tell a story of, you know, where I come from. And
well, I really love this, and I'm so glad that you went through with singing it. And listening to it, I was wondering, you know, knowing that you knew this song as a kid and that your mother sang it, when you were a child, what did the words mean to you? The song is just filled with metaphors about death, you know, crossing over the River Jordan. I'm going home to see my mother. I'm going home to see my father. What did you get about that? And was it a frightening song to you, thinking about death, or what?
No, it actually is a very soothing song. It's just the opposite of me. It's a song about life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a very funny thing that my mom told me once when I was 4 years old. She was working around we lived on a farm outside Springfield, Missouri, and she was working around the house, and all of a sudden she heard me screaming in the living room, and she thought, you know, I'd done something horrible had happened to me. She ran in the living room. She said, Charlie, what's wrong? And I looked up at her, and I said, I'm going to die. And she said, what in the world are you talking about? And she said, you're thinking about, she said, you don't have, she was like cracking up, you know, so... I always have this deep need for the beauty of life, the reason for life, and the preciousness of life, you know, and how precious every moment is that we're alive, and we should really do everything that we can to enhance this life that we have and this planet that we live on, and this song just evokes that to me.
Right. Well, I do hope you sing more. And
well,
I want to
you.
Thank you for talking with us. And why don't we end with your recording of The Wayfaring Stranger from your new CD, The Art of Song. And my guest has been Charlie Hayden. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Terry. I am a poor wayfaring stranger, a wandering through this world of woe, and there's no sickness, toil, or danger in that bright world to which I go. I'm going home to see my father.
Charlie Hayden from his 1999 CD, The Art of the Song. His latest CD is called Nocturne. His next CD, American Dreams, will be released in early October. Charlie Hayden celebrates his 65th birthday Tuesday. We wish him a very happy birthday. This is Fresh Air.